WNST, Towson Baltimore. Baltimore Positive. We are positively a little bit on the road here this week, but I'll be getting back, and the Orioles have been on the road as well. Luke Jones joins us now in advance of our 25th anniversary. Been working hard on that as well. We'll be at Costas next Thursday and then Drug City next Friday, celebrating 25 years. Luke is celebrating a real July pennant race. First place. I don't know. I'm just going to give the floor to you because we haven't had a whole lot of segments like this, Luke.
Yeah. I mean, we've talked about the Buck Showalter era. There were three really fun years with that. A couple other years that were okay. But before then, I mean, you're talking about the 25th anniversary. I mean, you go back to 1997 is the last time where you were looking at the Orioles being in this kind of position with so much baseball still to play. And that's important to remember. And that's even a cautionary tale after this weekend where the Orioles go down to the Trop and they take 3 out of 4 from the Rays, who looked like the class of the American League for the first three months of the season. Well, 4-14 in July. So it shows you how things can turn. And it shows you and reminds you just how much baseball there is to play. But after this weekend where the Orioles go down there, and dare I say, even Orioles fans taking over the place. If you saw some of the video on social media, on Twitter and whatnot, just a lot of fun and a lot of good baseball played by the Orioles and so many things to be encouraged by. And yeah, you have some other things that you take pause and maybe there's some concern about. But I mean, what more is there to say when you have the best record in the American League as we're getting ready to now talk about ramping up training camp and the Ravens and all that? This is very rare territory in which the Orioles have found themselves, and it's wild. It's not lost on me that it was 2 years ago around this time when the Orioles were getting ready to start a losing streak that rivaled what happened to them in 1988. It was just 2 years ago when that happened, where they lost basically the entire month of August, and now to see them where they're in first place, they leave St. Petersburg with a 2-game lead. And say what you want about this team, it's not perfect. No team is, mind you, but they just continue to play really good baseball and they get the job done. And it's not always in dominant fashion, as I've pointed out to you so many different times. But at the end of the night, you see Felix Bautista hugging Adley Rutschman more often than not. And that's a sign that something good happened that night. And boy, we saw it over the course of this weekend and taking 3 out of 4.
Well, the bottom line on losing, you don't, when you're going this well, if I were to tell you that the Orioles will go 4-14 at some point in August or September, you'd say, well, that doesn't feel real likely. And that's why we believe in pitching, right? We believe in better pitching will allow that to not happen, that your worst spells are, we went 6-8 over our last 14. We were, we're only 500, or we're two under 500, because we've talked so much about the magic number not really being an elimination magic number, but more like, do they need to get to 92 wins, 94 wins, 96 wins? How many games over 500 are they for the year? And this Tampa meltdown is it's a lesson to be learned, because I think most of us believe that was a really, really good team. We saw that back in April and early May when they were 84 Tigers kind of, and then they fell apart. I mean, when you're going well, you find it hard to believe that you can lose, 8 out of 10 or whatever, because that good teams don't do that. And over the course even of a season, the Tampa thing, that's an unusual meltdown for a team of that quality. It really is. And the Orioles are hoping to avoid that.
Yeah, although I'll still say this, Nestor. I mean, their season's not over. They're still going to make the playoffs. You go 4-14. Yeah, that stinks for 2.5 weeks, but it's 2.5 weeks. And they've
when you were 29 games over 500 to begin with, you got plenty of room to back up, right?
And that's also part of the lesson here that, look, we were – not me, because I was at the beach at the time, but so many people were ready to just completely panic when the Orioles lost 6-7. You're going to go through some tough stretches. Now, 4-14, it's a little on the extreme side for a team that had the best record in baseball for a large chunk of the first half. But it also, when you have gotten off to that kind of start and the Orioles find themselves in this position now, you do have a little bit of margin for error if you do have another rough patch. You don't want to have that, clearly. And Tampa Bay right now, there's That even though there's not a big fan base of Rays fans down in that area, there's all kinds of sentiments of what the heck is going on. So, they stopped hitting. They've had injuries. Some of their arms that they were counting on have physically haven't been right or what have you. But it's a long season, and the ebb and flow of it lends itself to having some rough patches. The Orioles minimized theirs, and since then they've taken off again. And Tampa Bay is, they're going in the wrong direction. So we'll see how it plays out ultimately, but so much to be encouraged by over the course of the weekend. I mean, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention the bomb that Gunnar Henderson hit on Sunday, which, what, 446 feet, they said. I think it was longer than that. Brandon Hyde said that after the game. I think you saw some really encouraging work out of the bullpen from Mike Bauman on Sunday. Just a couple footnotes. Yennier Cano on Sunday, I think that's the best he's looked in a while. That was good to see. We've talked about him being not as dominant as he was earlier in the year, which he was never going to continue that, but the stuff looked better. And Batista on Sunday, one of the best splits I've seen him have all year. He was throwing that devastating splitter that it's silly to say this because his overall numbers have been so great, but Ben McDonald even said it during the telecast. I don't think his splitter's been as consistent maybe this year as it was last year, but boy, it was really good on Sunday. So, you see elements like that, especially we've talked so much about the bullpen, and we'll continue to talk about it because, the early returns on Fujinami have been not great. But, also talking about someone who's new to the team, new to this experience, being in a pennant race. So, we'll see how that plays out. And certainly there's still time until the trade deadline. But, we can keep talking about this or that that isn't perfect about this team or something you'd like to be better. But at some point in time, you just look up at the standings and say, what more can you really ask for than what they've done through this point where we're talking about this type of team in the final week of July? And, I mean, it's... that I'd love to see them add another bullpen piece if they can. You and I spent a whole segment talking about Shohei Ohtani and whether that's a pipe dream, whether there's any merit to the possibility of that or not. But we can keep talking about the things that they're not. But what they are is a team that finished the weekend 23 games over 500, and they have the best record in the American League. So I'll remind everyone to enjoy that. Enjoy the ride. Don't just keep dwelling on, okay, well, this or that, or, Tyler Wells didn't look good on Sunday, which he didn't. But they continue to get the job done, and it's their stars, but it's also, guys that you wouldn't have expected, like a Ryan O'Hearn, for example, who hits a home run off a lefty on Sunday, no less, which another sign of the Orioles are living right these days. I think that much is stating the obvious.
Well, Luke, with the trading deadline coming up and thoughts about needs and where Grayson Rodriguez is. And look, we can talk about this rotation all day long where every second, third, fourth time through the rotation, somebody's going to falter and have what Wells had. I mean, we could talk about all of those guys, Bradish, any of them struggling at various points and what they do to bootstrap up. But the pitching is what we talked about for 3 months in regard to fortification and in regard to the trading deadline. The more I've listened to Ben McDonald talk about it, I've watched MLB Network, I've done some reading, just the way new baseball is, where all five teams in the American League East really believe that they can make the playoffs. And I would think in the case of the Red Sox and the Yankees, they probably believe they will. They believe they will have a run, something will happen. And if they're of that belief, and they have the wherewithal this week to add or subtract, I don't think they're going to be dealing from the bottom of the deck, those teams. So there's so many teams still involved in it. You wonder, where do you shop? Who are the sellers at this point when so many teams are of the belief they can make it?
Yeah, and that's what's so tricky about this. And I feel, we're now a couple years into having three wild cards, right? It's not a brand new thing, but it's still fairly new. For me, just personally looking at it, and not that I'm a national baseball reporter that, like a Buster Olney or a Ken Rosenthal, but I think that's where it's so tough to really kind of get a good feel for what teams are doing. I mean, we've talked about the Angels a lot, and we're just going to use Ohtani as an example for the moment. But, the Angels, despite all the injuries they've had, they've won six of their last 10. They haven't been god-awful of late. meaning the last week and a half, we know how Moreno and that ownership group has, proceeded in recent years. We know that, Shohei Ohtani's a transcendent talent. If you still have some semblance of a chance, are you just going to sell, or are you going to go for that third wild card spot? Which mathematically, it's not incredibly likely for a team like that, but they're still in it. It's not as though they're 10 games out of the final wild card spot. So, you have so many teams like that. You mentioned the Red Sox and the Yankees. You would think, and both teams played well over the weekend, so I think that certainly would lend itself to this idea. But you would think teams like that, the hubris is just going to be too much to say, we're not going to be sellers. Now, we might not go trade our best prospect, but we'll try to go fortify our rotation, or in the Yankees' case, their lineup. I mean, it's not a secret that they've really struggled to hit the ball, with Aaron Judge, having missed an extended period of time. So, I think that's what makes this so fascinating. And, through all that, you still have the backdrop, as you and I talked about a lot when we did really dive into the Ohtani debate, just how much teams value their prospects, whether you're talking about a low payroll kind of team, or whether you're talking about these teams that, are at the top and spending, to the luxury tax threshold and exceeding it and all that. So it leads to what could be a really interesting trade deadline in that regard. But, that's kind of the case every year. But you look at it, and the AL East being a perfect example of it. I mean, we don't spend a lot of time talking about the Blue Jays. Go look at what their record's been over the last 6 weeks or so. I mean, quietly, they've been one of the best teams in baseball over the last 6 weeks or so. And you look at them, they're 10 over 500. But I think that's still a team from a talent standpoint that is still very, very dangerous. So what do they do? How do they proceed? Do they catch Tampa Bay or the Orioles here over the next several weeks? So, I mean, it's just, the AL East is one example. And then you get into some of these divisions, like the Central, for example, where, Cleveland's still only a few games out, but they're 49 and 50. So you have those types of divisions as well, where there's a lot of mediocrity, but there's at least one playoff spot up for grabs there. So, I think.
Well, I think there's a point where Mike Elias would say to you right now, okay, the Indians are going to make the playoffs or whomever. And said, if we're going to lose to that team because we didn't deal for an $18 million pitcher and deal three prospects and lose Stowers and give away Mountcastle and, all of that to rent a pitcher for one start in October, we're already good enough. We're in first place, right? So there is a little part of that where I don't want to say there's. Stick with what we've got, but there's also why am I going to deal five prospects to rent anybody other than Ohtani for, a month and a half, and then who you're competing against. And you'd say, oh, well, great. We got a third starter or a fourth starter. We didn't get anything. We got another Kyle Gibson. Okay, fine. We kept him away from the Yankees or the Red Sox or the Blue Jays. Okay, fine. We don't even compete with them. It's not like you're going to see that pitcher three times in September, the way you would have back in the old days, where like, hey, we're going to get Ohtani. He's going to pitch. He's going to pitch twice against the Red Sox, twice against the Yankees, twice against the Rays in September, and that's going to matter to us even getting to the playoffs. I think there's a little bit more. The math is in the Raven or Ravens, Orioles' favor at this point this week, just saying. They're going to make the playoffs. And then it's a crapshoot as to what happens in October. I mean, are you dealing because you're desperate to think we can't make the playoffs? Are you dealing to get bullpen help and not Andrew Miller bullpen help, not top of the line, $12 million reliever? I'm talking about just getting another Fuji, right? I mean, a couple of these guys. Sure, that's okay, but I mean, I had somebody come up to me, chase me around in Dewey Beach the other night. Luke, as much as Chad Steele thinks I don't do sports, everywhere I go, people come up to me and talk about baseball, talk about the Ravens, talk about things. And this guy was, is Holiday coming up and playing in September? And I'm thinking, what these baseball fans have had nothing on their mind in all of this time that like they're thinking about Jackson Holiday coming up in September, and we're 2 days out on the trading deadline and need pitching help. So fans and where their minds are, it's got to be different than where Elias is, and his mind has to be different than even where he thought it would be, because I don't think he thought he'd be in first place with a two-game lead right now, right? I mean, the notion that who we were going to deal for in April or May or June gets different when you're in first place and you say, we're going to give up what to get what, and we're competing with whom. And in the end, what difference is that player really going to make in October? Not between now and October, because I don't want to say it's arrogant to think you're going to make the playoffs, as we've just pointed out. The Rays are slipping and falling, and they can't get up right now. But from the steady and slow pace of what they've done here, I don't need them. I don't need you to send me a WNST text an hour before the trading deadline and tell me that they gave half the franchise away for Ohtani, or that they gave three legitimate prospects away for a guy in the bullpen who may pitch 18 innings the rest of the way or something, right?
Yeah, but it's funny you mention that, because you talked about starting pitchers, and it's like, okay, how many times will they have an opportunity? And obviously, Ohtani's the outlier here, right? Because he's going to hit and pitch. So let's put him aside. We've already talked about him a lot. I'm still not convinced he's even being dealt. I'm certainly not convinced the Orioles are going to be in that market specifically, meaning giving up those kind of prospects. I think about this in terms of, you mentioned starter versus reliever, and let's assume for right now they advance, they make the playoffs, and let's say they get past the wild card round, which is best of three, or at this point they'd have a bye, right? I mean that's where they are. They have the best record in the American League. So let's talk in terms of just the divisional
And
round,
by the
five
way,
game series.
that's worth fighting for. The buy's worth
Sure, no
fighting
question
for.
about it.
Right.
No question about it. Although you could also say, in a sport like baseball, does it behoove you to sit around for a week? That's what's kind of crazy about this.
Yeah, when you're sitting
But
down there in October watching them have batting practice 6 days in a row, right?
yeah, I mean, you could set the rotation, but if you go cold, then hey, it can be over quick. But the point is, and this is where I keep, and we talked about this long before we even dove into Ohtani talk. I look at it in terms of if you can get a bullpen arm, and look, there's a wide range there, from someone like Fujinami to someone that would be of more of the Andrew Miller kind of
Well,
acquisition.
Andrew Miller was different too, because
And
he was left-handed, and that's a whole other thing, right?
well, but at the same time, but he got lefties and righties out. I mean, he wasn't a lefty situational guy. He was lefty, but he got everyone out.
But
I
he
mean,
was
that's how
dirty
dominant
against
he was. But he was dirty
lefties.
against everybody. I mean, go back and look at that point. But the point, I guess the point I'm trying to make here, and look, again, there are different names that would be out there. I mean, the Padres right now with Josh Hader, for example, it's a rental, but he's a dominant arm. What are you going to have to give up to get someone like him? Could it be a case where you got him and Blake Snell? That's been tossed about as far as just, a lot of the trade discourse that's out there in general. You get a reliever like that in a five-game series, and let's say you run into a team that's playing well, and it goes 5 games. You get a reliever, that guy could impact four of those games. Depending on how the off days, or if there's a rainout or something like that, could impact all five of those games. Even the best starting pitcher, two of those games. So, and I'm not saying it's the same impact, but as in terms of what they can do, that's where I've said over and over, I'd be more interested. And again, this is assuming you're not giving up the farm, like you're not giving up your elite of your elite prospects. But I'd be m much more inclined, and I've felt this way for a while, to see if you can add to the bullpen. And you look at it like this way: okay, we don't add a dominant starter, but we might have been able to shorten the game to the sixth inning now, as opposed to the eighth. If we can go out and get another stud arm, and if Mike Bauman does things like he did on Sunday, or Fujinami, improves his control a little bit. He's got a good arm. We've seen that. Those are the kind of ways that you kind of think about it in terms of, if you're looking at it analytically, is the value of getting some more relief help to shortening the game that way, rather than trying to go get a stud pitcher and understanding how much that's going to cost. And if it's a rental, then you're talking about only having them for a very limited period of time. That's where I've thought, a team like the Orioles, who, let's face it, everything they've done the last couple of years in terms of player acquisition it's been about improving on the margins, right? Kyle Gibson, an upgrade over, over last year, as far as just another high floor starting pitcher. Adam Frazier, an upgrade over Rougned Odor, but not a superstar. It's been those types of moves for them. So that's where I look at this and say, Ohtani, going out and trying to get Ohtani or going out and trying to get Dylan Cease or someone like that would feel out of character for how Elias has proceeded. Now, you said it, and it's completely right. They certainly weren't anticipating being 23 games over 500 a week before the trade deadline. So maybe you do need to readjust and try to land a bigger fish. But at the same time, you say, well, what we've been doing is working,
Well, that
right?
was my point. My point is, you need a bigger fish when your fish have been fine.
Right, exactly. So you look at it through the context of, all right, could we add another starter in terms of depth where you say, okay, it'd be nice to pencil in this guy. We still don't quite know about Grayson Rodriguez, although I really liked what he did over the weekend. Tyler Wells has been shaky, like his command. So you're wondering, is there a physical issue? Is it just a rough patch for him? So yeah, you could go out and get a starter that moves into the back end of your rotation and that stabilizes you for the rest of the regular season. But that's probably not moving the needle whatsoever in October because you're not going to have a five-man rotation in the playoffs. So that's where you look at it in terms of, okay, ace or number two starter, whatever it is, or can you more easily add some more bullpen help to what you have, fortify that a little bit, take a little bit of pressure off someone like Yennier Cano, which Ben McDonald was talking over the weekend a lot about his arm slot being lower and wondering if maybe there's a little bit of fatigue. Although, like I said, he looked much better on Sunday, so that was good to see. But if you can do it that way, I think there's an argument to be made, especially for what the cost of that might be compared to going and trying to get a top of the line starter. That you might get a better value in terms of what you're acquiring than how much you have to give up for getting that top, that frontline starting pitcher. So it's gonna be fascinating. And I would say, and I know Buster Olney tweeted this out, I think it was early Sunday morning, that the general sentiment about the Orioles to this point in terms of talking about the trade deadline has been they're fitting the profile of a measured buyer, which is probably what you should expect. Now, that could turn into a bigger acquisition. Or maybe it is another, we'll see kind of reliever that they add to the mix. So, but I think, again, and this goes back to what you've said, and you said it, even before we got into our Ohtani debate a few days ago, that, at some point in time, you kind of look around and say, yeah, the Orioles, they're not perfect at this, or you'd like them to be better at this. But, well, whatever they are, it sure as heck is working really well because they're the
They're the
team that
best
has the
team in the
best record
American
in the
League,
league.
right? I mean,
Yeah, exactly.
there's no arguing that in August, right? I mean, like you could say, well, do we need to add anything when we've already been the best and we're getting better and we have? Do we need to do? I know one thing they don't need to do: nothing desperate. They're not working from any other, place of other than inspiration, because what they have, they can win the World Series with. I mean, they can, and I
I
don't.
mean, I think the word, I agree with you. Not desperate, but I will say, and again, this goes back to what deals are out there and what teams are truly selling and what are they asking for. I do want to see urgency, though, if the right deal is there that makes sense, that can improve your club, whether it's a starter, whether it's a bullpen arm. Heck, I wouldn't be opposed to if the right bat was out there that they felt fit their lineup really well. I wouldn't be opposed to that. It's not as though their lineup's perfect. The point is you can cast a pretty wide net here and see if the right deal is there that, and some team really fancies one of your prospects that privately, maybe you don't think you're not quite as high on where you say, you know what, this guy's value to everyone else is higher than how we project him to be over the next couple of years. I'll move that guy if I can go get this reliever or this starter to kind of strengthen my rotation a little bit. And one thing I do want to say, and I mentioned starting pitching, that is not a knock on their current starting pitchers at all. One thing you do have to keep in mind, Gibson being the exception because he's a veteran, right? He's in his mid-30s, but the rest of these guys, take a look at what their career highs are in terms of single season innings. And that's not to say that they're going to shut guys down or anything like that, but just keep that in mind as well, that, is there someone out there from a starting rotation standpoint? And it might not even be someone that would factor into their playoff plans a ton, but if it's someone that can kind of give them a higher floor for their rotation, and maybe you can back off, you skip a guy here or there, something like that, just to keep guys, healthy in terms of their innings, keep them strong in terms of their innings. And look, there's player tracking movement and all those other things you look at beyond just an arbitrary number of innings. Let's be clear about that. But that is something to keep in mind when you talk about where Grayson Rodriguez's innings are going to be, where Tyler Wells's innings are going to be, where Kyle Bradish's workload is going to be at the end of the year. And that's not to say they're going to fall apart or anything like that, but I do think that's something to keep in the back of your mind, and certainly is something Mike Elias and Sig Meidel and the Orioles front office is considering in terms of, it might not even be an ace pitcher, a starting pitcher in that case. It might be, can we add another Kyle Gibson type, as you suggested, that might not even be a guy that starts a playoff game, but might help us manage our young pitchers a little bit better over the final 2 months where, hey, we still want to win games, but we also want to keep guys healthy in the same way that it's going to be fascinating to see. Batista and Cano probably not going to be available for the start of the Philly series because they pitched 4 of the last 5 days. So, you still have to keep in mind, as much as you want to go for a win every night, and certainly Brandon Hyde managed this series down at the Trop much more like a playoff series in the way that he pushed some of his bullpen arms. But at the same time, you still have to keep your eye on the big picture here. There's still 2+ months of regular season baseball to go. And yeah, the Orioles are, they're in the driver's seat to be in the playoffs and to maybe get a first round bye, as we've talked about. But you still want to keep guys healthy. You still have to be cognizant of workload and all those different things because you want those guys pitching for you in October. Kyle Bradish, okay, he's not a household name, but go look at how that kid has pitched over the last calendar year. He's been a high quality starting pitcher in the American League since late July of last year. And you want to be able to continue that through October, and you hope through late October, maybe early November, if you want to dream that big at this point. So that's something to keep in mind in terms of other considerations here over the final week as we get to the trade deadline.
Means, Givens, other organization guys, arms they have, are there innings in there for any of those anywhere over the next 2 months?
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's so tight. And I know Michael Givens is throwing down in Sarasota, but I don't know if you can count on that. I mean, Dylan Tate was shut down entirely again. I mean, I don't know if we're going to see him pitch this year. Means, yeah, I and that's going to be the fascinating, not that you necessarily look at him and say, oh, we'll just slide him back into the top of the rotation. But I was just talking about trying to manage some of these younger guys, their workloads. John Means is going to be fresh from an arm standpoint, right? He hasn't pitched since April of 2022. Could he be someone that you slot into, I don't know, make a couple starts in September? Maybe he becomes a bullpen arm for you. And remember, that's how he put himself on the map. He was coming out of the Orioles bullpen at the beginning of 2019.
Well, he's probably
So
going to
is he
have to
some
be that guy instead of, you don't
Yeah.
expect him to go out and throw 95 pitches, I don't think, right?
Right. I mean, he could, and that's not to say that he wouldn't get up to that by the end of the year, but he's going to have to go through his spring training, so to speak. And he'll start a minor league rehab assignment in August, and he'll go through that, and then he'll be available hypothetically for the Orioles in early September, let's say. But yeah, you're going to have to manage, and you're going to have to see how it fits. I mean, it might be that he's pitching okay, but maybe is better in some shorter stints out of the bullpen. I don't think he's going to become a guy that's going to be used back-to-back nights, but he might be a guy that, if your starting pitcher's struggling in the fourth inning, that John Means comes in and throws 3 innings. It could be that kind of scenario. So, I mean, but in terms of some of the other names you mentioned, I mean, DL Hall, who knows at this point? I mean, he's been on a strength and conditioning program because of that back injury he had last offseason. So, can he be in the mix for them? Could be, if he's right physically come September. So, but these are maybes, right? These aren't slam dunks. These aren't sure things. So Again, I'd be surprised, and I said this when they acquired Fujinami. I'd be surprised if you don't see them really trying to land another bullpen arm. And will it have the impact of an Andrew Miller in 2014? Time will tell, but I think they should at least be seriously looking at a high impact bullpen arm that they could kind of put, if you're looking at the pecking order, next to Cano at the very least. If you can add another guy that you really feel is a dude, that you can put in the seventh or eighth inning, that makes Mike Bauman better. That makes Danny Coulomb better. That makes Brian Baker better. If you can get him straightened out, we've seen him pitch really well at times this year, but he struggled. Consistency has been a major issue for him. But all those guys that I just mentioned, that frankly, they've had to give some high leverage situations to because Cano and Bautista cannot pitch every single night. Although this series, it kind of felt that way. But
Well, they put Fuji in the game on Saturday, almost blew the game, right? Like it
yeah,
was.
I mean, I'm glad you mentioned that because I mentioned this in passing. That if there was one moment over the course of the weekend that was curious to me, it was that, especially because Bauman, who was great on Sunday. I mean, Bauman was the player of the game for them on Sunday. I mean, he saved the game for them, that he gave them that kind of length when Wells was not sharp. But I thought I would have gone to him on Saturday. But I think what was interesting about this, and I even talked to, interestingly enough, it was just the gentleman in my church on Sunday morning. We talked about this, and he said, "You know what? That really felt like Brandon Hyde in the organization saying, we got to find out about this kid. We got to see if he can handle this. We got to see if he can sink or swim." And it did not start well. I will say he was very close to getting out of it if Jorge Mateo makes a play that I think he needed to make in that spot. So you're hoping that there could be some long-term benefit to him being in that situation. And you were trying to evaluate. Again, you're evaluating to see if, do you need to go out and get another bullpen arm, which I'm of the thought that they should. So, but that was the one moment over the course of the weekend that kind of felt like, okay, not that it was a development kind of example, but an example where let's see what he can do here. Back-to-back nights, we pitched him on Friday. We were trailing in that game, so that wasn't the same deal. But can he do this? And it started out really shaky, but he did settle in a little bit. And like I said, if Mateo makes the play, he at least, they get out of it. So, I thought that was interesting. Again, lots for Fujinami to prove, and even if he had pitched well in that spot, it doesn't mean that it's a slam dunk in the positive direction either. But I thought that was an interesting, to me, that was kind of an interesting checkpoint over the course of the weekend that they put him in that spot. Because again, I would have gone with Mike Bauman in that spot, but then Mike Bauman wouldn't have been available, I guess, to throw 2 2/3 on Sunday the way that he did, which
Well, also
was
it was unusual
absolutely
Cano coming
massive.
in the seventh too, right? I mean, Cano came in early. I thought Cano was going to pitch the eighth. He didn't, and then all hell broke loose. And that's what you're trying to avoid over the next 2 months. And there's no worse place to do it than at the Trop against Tampa, right? They are the primary team in front of you. Wins two wins, a loss is two losses. The whole deal that they put him in that leverage in that spot that quickly. And I know he pitched earlier. He's not first off the plane. He had been here a couple of days, but that was curious. It was curious. And it also spoke to me that would validate all 40 minutes of this conversation, which is they probably need more bullpen help, right? I mean, that's what we're sitting here talking about. If this is where you're going and you're throwing darts and it works or doesn't work or bad defense got in the way, which is unusual, but they had a lot of that going on for one day at least, kicking the ball around a little bit, wild pitches. I mean, just crazy stuff, but they need help in the bullpen, I guess. And this is going to be a week where that's what job number one, other than beating the Phillies, job number two is going to be what's in the market, evaluating that. And it's very, very complex, as it is every year. We're just not in it like last time we were in it like this was Andrew Miller, right? I mean, it's a long time, a decade ago that we last time we were really in it where we had to give to get, and we have, so we can give. But then the question is, what do we get? And I trust Elias implicitly in this case. And again, I go back to if they don't do anything, I'm not going to be the one complaining and saying they've lost the pennant by not making a trade.
And this is where, and I said this to you when we're talking about Ohtani. This is where you look at it analytically speaking. And yes, there are examples where a trade deadline deal has been a major difference maker. But for everyone where you look at that, you'll find plenty, and I mean plenty, and I'm talking even all-star caliber players that are dealt. You'll find plenty that you look at it and see how it plays out and say, wow, that didn't really work out the way they thought it did. Or even if that player is really good, they still lose in the divisional round, or they still lose in the LCS because, I mean, it really, I mean, it's baseball. I don't need to tell you this. I mean, the best team does not always win the World Series. Quite often that does not happen. We talk about this a lot with football. It's the same thing. The one sport, and I'll put hockey aside because that's not my wheelhouse in terms of knowledge, but the one sport, the one major team sport in this country that the best team typically does win is basketball, because 7-game series where you're talking about a sport like that, almost always the best team wins. And this year was a strange, exception with the Miami Heat, but making it to the finals. But football, how many times do we see wild cards? I mean, look no further than the Baltimore Ravens, being a wild card and winning a Super Bowl in 2000. And I mean, it's baseball, same thing. We talked about this at the conclusion of the Dodgers series. I mean, the Dodgers have been, from a regular season standpoint, best team in baseball for, going on close to a decade now. Go look at some of their regular season success. One World Series title, and it was the weird COVID year. So it speaks to the best team doesn't always win. So that doesn't mean you don't make a deal, mind you. I want to be very clear about that. But you have to, you consider all these factors as far as what you're going to give up, what consequence that could be in terms of next year, 2 years, 3 years, 4 years from now, because it still matters. You don't want to go all in for 1 year and compromise what you can do in the future. But at the same time, you also don't know for sure if you're going to be in this position next year, 2 years from now, 3 years from now. So you're trying to balance all those factors and see, is there a deal for us that we can give up? We're going to have to give up something, right? We're not going to just be able to trade Jorge Mateo, for example, but give up something to go get something that we think can really improve our chances. And like I said, that's where, if I'm looking at it more on the margins, looking at it in a less conventional way, it's where I keep looking at bullpen help, where, okay, you're not going to get that starter that can go 7 innings in a playoff game, which very few start. Even aces hardly are ever go 7 innings in a playoff game in this day and age. I mean, it's the way it is. For me, can you shorten the game on the back end of the bullpen? Can you make it a 6-inning game? Can you make it a game of, on some nights, 5 1/3, and you turn the ball over to some bullpen arm that they acquire over the next week, and then Cano after that, and then Batista after that? I mean, that's the other way of looking at it. And, look at the Orioles of 2014. I mean, that was a team that got to the ALCS, had a dominating starting rotation. Chris Tillman was good. Miguel Gonzalez was good. Wei-Yin Chen was good. These weren't great bona fide number one, number two starting pitchers for some of the best rotations around the league. They had a rotation that was good enough, and then they had a really good bullpen that became great when they added Andrew Miller to the mix. So, I think for me, that's still, if you're going to ask me how I think this is going to go, if they're going to make a move, I think it's going to be something along those lines. And that doesn't mean they'll get Josh Hader necessarily, but I think they're going to try to see if they can land an impact bullpen arm that can just shorten the game even more, especially when you start talking about getting to the big fellows at the back.
Well, you mentioned the wild card Ravens. Anybody wants copies of Purple Rain 1, Purple Rain 2, Free the Bird shirts, Get Nasty shirts, old school stuff. We're giving it all away. It is our 25th anniversary next Thursday, August 3rd. We'll see Acostas. We'll be Acostas from 11 to 4, maybe a little later. And then on Friday, we'll be at Drug City down in Dundalk. Johnny O is going to be with. I have so many guests. I'm going to give the whole roll call to the guest a little later on. It's all brought to you by the Maryland Lottery in conjunction with our friends at Window Nation. 866-99. You buy two, you get two free, 2 years, 0% financing. We are taking the Maryland Crab Cake Tour on the road all August and into September, celebrating 25 years, watching baseball, waiting on the trading deadline, and watching the Birds take on the Phillies this week. You can follow Luke at Baltimore Luke out on the Instagrams and the social medias and Twitter and Facebook, as well as myself getting back from the beach to Baltimore. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, and we never stop talking Baltimore positive.